This is a HeadGum Original.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
In February 2021, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert bought a Super Bowl ad for a small business that would never have been able to afford something like that. In order to supercharge the effectiveness of this advertising stunt, Colbert got actor Sam Elliott to lend his distinctive voice as the narrator of the ad.
Well, Foggy Pine Brooks has a second location called the Internet, which means...
But then they went even further by enlisting another celebrity to personally vouch for the store.
Just listen to this satisfied customer.
Foggy Pine Books has the best selection in all of Boone. They have books on all of my interests, such as World War II, and also books about the events from 1939... to 1945. Thank you, Foggy Pine.
Not only does Tom Hanks have a bit of fun with his well-known love of all things having to do with World War II, he also sings.
The Baptist Church and the Boone Saloon. Foggy Pine, Foggy Pine, Foggy Pine.
Of course, part of what makes this bit work is that Tom Hanks isn't someone that we typically think of as a pitch man in TV commercials. On those rare occasions when he does make an appearance during a commercial break, it's usually because he is lending his voice or his image to a high-minded cause. The importance of journalism in the Washington Post's Democracy Dies in Darkness campaign.
Knowing keeps us free.
Or this ad with Michelle Obama.
Behind every serviceman and woman, there is a family that serves as well.
Let's all join forces and show our thanks.
You know, public service ads. That's what we associate Tom Hanks with, if we think of Tom Hanks in commercials at all. I, on the other hand, feel like I will say yes to just about any commercial job that will have me.
When I'm out with the guys, I'll step up and order a beer, even though I know it could set off a gout attack.
That's me in an ad for gout medication. The slogan for the campaign was, "For crying gout loud." I was playing Ethan, described in the audition breakdown as super in touch with himself.
Gout, I'm a sensitive guy. Can't you pick on someone your own size?
Some of the first acting I ever did was in a handful of TV spots for a local car dealership in Jefferson City, Missouri, when I was 10 years old.
Lee Thornton Used Car Lot is full of clean, dependable used cars. In fact, due to this...
I had no idea what I was saying. And it didn't matter, because I was being paid. I knew somehow that this was different than, for instance, being in a school play where I needed to understand my character and what was going on. I still don't know what APR financing is.
Buy now and make no monthly payments till next March!
Almost 3 decades later, it was a regional spot for the New York Lottery in 2013 that played a significant role in restarting my professional acting career. I played a man who wakes up and does everything in the wrong order. Puts on his suit and then takes a shower while wearing the suit. But then the one thing I get right is the order of the numbers when I purchase a lottery ticket.
4392. Straight.
You're very wet.
For most of that commercial, on purpose, I have what could be legitimately described as dead eyes.
What's happening? What are we talking about? Commercials?
We're doing an episode about commercials.
Great, great.
Molly Lloyd is a very talented and funny friend of mine. She and I used to be in a sketch comedy team at UCB called Stone Cold Fox. We would do shows 3 or 4 Fridays a month, but even back then, the place where I was most likely to see Molly was during a commercial break while I was watching TV. People love hiring you for commercials.
That's nice.
Do you think this, is that how it feels to you?
That's fun. You know, obviously not, because I feel like as human beings and actors, we just focus on what we don't book, or we focus on the callbacks we don't get that we were positive we were going to get.
Yeah.
But I do feel super lucky, because I, you know, have had moments in my life where I've had good success with commercials. And then you have, you know, it's like peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
But I'm super grateful for them. And I got to be honest with you, I love doing them. It's a blast. So I'm thrilled.
Do you remember the first commercial you auditioned for? And what was the first commercial you did?
Molly has what I would consider to be a great attitude about this stuff. Even when she thinks back to her first commercial audition, a job she ultimately didn't even book, it is with a feeling of enthusiasm.
And also it was a blur because I was like, this is it. The big time. You know what I mean? Like, eBay. I've been on eBay. Now I get to be possibly in a commercial. My mind is blown. But I don't even think I got a call back. And then
I talk about show business failure and humiliation all the time on this podcast. And yet there is something about the realm of commercials where, for me, the feeling of show business failure often stems not from losing the job, but from getting it. Even if the work itself is basically the same as what I'd be doing in film or television, I just tend to have a negative feeling about it.
I told my commercial agents a few years ago that I didn't want to comment. I didn't want to do any more auditions for sports dads because I wasn't booking them.
Yeah, you know, I think there's like a type or an idea that everybody has in their head about what that person like not only looks like, because I mean, let's be honest, Connor Ratliff, are obviously a great improviser, but even you can't make up for the fact that people have an idea in their head about how a sports person looks and behaves. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's so much out of our hands.
Yeah. And I'm like, send me in for a sad guy in the office. Send me in for a boss that's not appropriate. Send me in for a loser on the lam. You know, whatever it is.
Loser on the lam. I love it. I wish more of my breakdowns said loser on the lam. Mine are always like, she wears a cardigan and she has a raised eyebrow and her husband's a real turd. That's all I ever get.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
My name is Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 21 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. Now I do an ad-supported podcast where I try to figure out why he allegedly looked at my audition tape and thought that I had dead eyes.
I'm surprised I haven't booked one of those husband parts. Because
turd husband?
Turd husband. I've gotten undesirable husband. I've booked that.
Undesirable? My goodness.
And that's the short version.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Even in an episode where we talk about commercials, you're going to hear me doing commercials. It's part of how we pay for things. You like a show? Well, the ads help pay for it. You like being an actor? You're probably going to do commercials. And if you're lucky, you'll do a bunch of them. Maybe even playing the same kind of character over and over for all different kinds of products and services.
How many commercials do you think you've done, Molly, if you had to estimate?
Oof, probably over 100. This last year has been, you know, the worst year of most of our lives, and yet somehow in there I had a good year. I like to think it's because some actors are like, I'm not going to do a commercial right now. This is a pandemic. And I'm like, I'll do it.
More often than not, I feel like I will look up during a commercial break. And if there's a cool, fun mom in a commercial, it's you. Are you happy with the cool mom? Because I feel like you are also in real life a cool mom.
Oh, thanks. I think my son would beg to differ, but I think he thinks I'm extremely uncool.
Molly, is that true?
Well, he's 4.5. So we're still in the phase where he's like, parents are in some ways magic and also are like crushing his vibe. I mean, he'd love to paint the whole house in different colors and then set it on fire and then ride my elderly dog off into the sunset. And I don't let him do those things. So I'm a bit of a buzzkill, I suppose. But there are aspects of it where, you know, he's still looking up to us and learning from us. So we haven't reached the mom and dad are the worst stage yet. I'm sometimes cool mom. I have sort of moved into fairly uncool mom, which is, to be frank, more fun.
Yeah.
Either dorky, like right now I'm in a cable commercial where I'm pretty dorky, and that was fun. My cardigan was huge, and it was lilac. You know what I mean? So I'm moving away from, like, kind of cool soccer mom, and I'm moving into the mom you come back and visit, you know, from freshman year of high school. Or not high school. I wish. College. All my kids in commercials are in college. I'm like, ugh. But those are more fun. Is it going to be a peach or a lilac cardigan? I don't know. Just get me in there. I'm ready to do my thing. I'm 100 in commercials. I play a 100-year-old woman.
Back in the pre-COVID days of in-person commercial auditions, I would sometimes walk into a waiting room and see 12 guys who looked almost exactly like me. Other times, it was clear that a particular commercial was casting a wide net, meaning there was no discernible pattern as to what kind of actor they were looking for. Because in a lot of cases, they're just seeking out a certain kind of energy. Someone who can be funny and surprising.
I don't know Tom Hanks.
Right.
But I'm dying to meet his son.
Which one?
Chet.
This is Nicole Byer. Nobody is funnier or more surprising.
Chet, who thinks he's a Jamaican man, I think it's really funny. I don't know if it's a bit or if, like, that's how he speaks all the time, but it's very funny to me.
I didn't know if he was doing Ali G.
I met Nicole back in my early days when we were both doing improv at UCB, but by now you're probably familiar with her from any one of a dozen things. Nailed It on Netflix, or one of her podcasts, or stand-up, or from showing up as a guest star on any one of your favorite TV shows, from Brooklyn Nine-Nine to The Good Place to Tuca and Birdie or The Simpsons. She also has a new Netflix special coming out on December 7th called Nicole Byer, Big Beautiful Weirdo.
Well, I hope that happens. I hope you get to meet him.
Thank you.
If you've seen her perform, or if you've been lucky enough to work with her, it's hard to imagine Nicole being fired from an acting job. And yet, it happened. On the set of a commercial.
I don't know what year this was, but I was still in New York, so maybe it was like 2009, maybe 2010-ish. But I had gotten a job doing a commercial for Belvita Breakfast Biscuits, and it was a Comedy Central branded thing. So I think they were just like, oh, the casting director will cast the funniest people possible. And I went into the audition. I was like, I think I was really funny. Then I found out the next day I got it, and I was so excited. And so I get like a phone call from a producer, and they were like, meet us on 54th and 8th and get into a white van. And I said, yes. And what a good way to kill somebody, because like I truly had no other information. So then I get into this white van, and then we go to like upstate New York, and then I get there and we do the wardrobe fitting, and they send a picture to the client. The client was like, ugh, this is too tight. They had me in this like spandex thing. And then the client was like, more clothing. So then they put more clothing on me, and then they're like, ugh, less clothing. Then we did less clothing, and then they were like, oh, we're gonna go in a different direction. And I was like, oh my God, but I came all the way up here. Like, what is going on? And then they were shooting like four different spots at the same time, so they just used a thinner, whiter woman from one of the spots to replace me. And I like kind of knew what was up because it was like a clothing thing, and I was like, I guess I look too big in spandex. And then the makeup girl was crying, like crocodile tears, not like real crying, but she was like, the different direction they're going in is less big, or maybe she said less fat, I don't remember. And then that crushed me, because then I realized everyone on set knew what was happening. And as they were like, you're wrapped today, Nicole, and I was like, okay. And like everyone had big puppy dog eyes, and then I had to ride in this van all the way back. And then I remember like crying one little droplet, but then I got on the phone with my manager and I was like, they have to pay me for the day, this is fucked up. I've always been about my money. And one of the girls in the van back was like, honestly, this like isn't your fault. One of my friends really wanted to audition for Ariel and the Little Mermaid when that was on Broadway. And she was like, but she couldn't do it because she's too tall. And I was like, that's something she couldn't help. I could have just been a thinner person. And she's like, no, it's the same thing. So that's the thing I was fired from. Belveeta breakfast biscuits.
Is that a product that still exists?
I believe so. It has yellow packaging and the V is big. It's triggering to see in a grocery store.
So when you do see it, it brings to mind this experience.
Yeah, I go, I'll never buy Belveeta breakfast biscuits because what the fuck is a breakfast biscuit? One. Two, y'all fired my ass.
Have you ever been curious to try one? Do you ever look at one and think, I'll just try one?
I've seen them on sets and I'll never try one. I'll never put one to my lips.
I never will either in solidarity.
Connor, thank you so much.
When I first started doing this podcast, the central idea had to do with taking a bad audition experience and turning it into something fun. In the back of my mind, I thought about a sketch that Nicole wrote with her friend and fellow comedian Sashir Zameda back in 2013 for UCB Comedy, inspired by their real experiences with casting directors.
LaShawna, did you get those clams I asked for?
Ooh, child, I got them clams. I got everything on that list you gave me.
Okay, great. I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing. I have an adjustment, if that's okay. How can I say this? I need you to be more urban.
What?
This role?
If you watch the sketch, you can find it on YouTube. I think it's a really effective example of how sharp comedians can pinpoint something that's deeply uncomfortable in a way that's both funny and thought-provoking.
Hey, Nicole, I need you to be blacker. Do you understand what I mean when I say blacker?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Do you know how to be sassy? Yes.
When it first came out, I went on an audition where the casting director was like, be blacker. And I was like, oh, what? And I never heard anyone say those words because it's usually coded and like, be more street and be more urban or whatever. And I was like, really taken aback. And I was like, okay. And then I guess they saw me kind of like change a little bit. And he was like, your video. And I was like, oh, okay. Yes, my video. And it was, I didn't get that part because I truly was thrown.
Oh no. So he was trying to do the bit with you.
Yes. But I did not understand because it was a real thing. It was very, very confusing. But honestly, lately, I haven't had to be any other type of black other than my black, which is truly a real dream. I love that. It's a nice little treat.
How do you cope with any show business disappointments, Nicole?
I try to think it is actually not personal. It wasn't meant for me, and something that is meant for me will come, and I'm in therapy. So I will talk ad nauseum about things that make me upset in therapy. And I have to remember that, like, I've done great things, I will do great things. So it truly is just taking a moment, stepping back and being like, you're okay. You were okay without it before. You'll be okay without this in the future.
Sounds healthy.
I'm trying. I'm trying very hard to be a healthy human being, and it's exhausting.
Well, if it wasn't exhausting, everyone would do it.
What's up, Connor? Long time no see.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. It's been a billion years.
I know. It's truly so strange that...
This is my friend Jonathan Fernandez, who is another member of Stone Cold Fox, along with Molly and me.
I definitely create things and book guests as a way of, like, also having a social life.
Yeah.
If I was athletic, I would play sports with people or something.
Jonathan has been incredibly busy. You might recognize him from the HBO Max revival of Gossip Girl or from the recent TV series version of Lethal Weapon. You also may have seen him in a commercial or two, and if you have, more than likely, he has been cast as some version of a really cool guy.
You're maybe one of the most best-dressed people that I've ever encountered in real life who's a real person. Whenever I would show up for Stone Cold Fox rehearsal or practice, I would look like I found my clothes in a box of things that Old Navy was throwing away. And my guess is that you would show up to auditions with that same cool sense of style.
A lot of what you're saying, like when I would go to the auditions, they also like things that are kind of like incongruous in that I also like skateboarded, you know? So like I always had like my skateboard with me, but then that doesn't vibe with like a suit or like suit separates or wearing vests and ties and stuff like that. So I think that became, I don't want to say a crutch, because in, you know, in commercials, it's like, you do what you got to do, who cares? But for me, I was like, I know that so much of my power comes in just from like the first impression they get of me when I walk in. And then after that, it's like, well, can I sustain that impression? Because I probably won't be able to. But a lot of times they already make up their decision by just being like, oh, this is a guy that we just want to be a part of our thing because of that coolness or whatever. And then they don't trust me with their dialogue.
Back in 2013, Jonathan and I were selected to audition for a series of Lexus commercials that aired live during Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. You remember Jimmy Fallon, right? From episode 5 of Band of Brothers? Well, before he took over The Tonight Show, he was the host of Late Night on NBC, and they decided to do a multi-week ad campaign where they would cast improvisers to come up with live Lexus ads. Four members of Stone Cold Fox were submitted by UCB to audition, and it was you, me, John Murray, Leslie Mizell. Which is funny because Stone Cold Fox was not an improv team. We were a sketch team.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were submitted to do this.
Yeah. And then John Murray recently reminded me of the fact that, like, I forgot that I did a backflip or like a back handspring or something during it. And he was like, I still to this day think that that's the reason we booked it, just because that was like the one thing. Because all of us were funny. Like, we were all doing good improv. So it's like, how do you choose one over the other?
Yeah, you did that backflip. And I remember the people that we were auditioning for thought it was so cool. and 100%, that's why we got it.
I'm telling you, dude, I'm a one-trick pony. For me, it's just like, put on like the cool factor and that's it. Like, outside of that, it's like there's nothing left in the tank.
So the four of us from Stone Cold Fox booked two of these late night Lexus commercials, both of which were filmed outside during a single cold, dark night in the Dumbo area of Brooklyn, which stands for Down Under the Manhattan Bridge Overpass. Not exactly the ideal circumstance in which to perform comedic scenes. At the center of the ad was a parked Lexus, which we would perform our scene around, and then for the final few moments, we would get into the car and pretend we were about to drive it. When Late Night threw to its first commercial break, there we were on national television asking the at-home audience to send in suggestions via social media.
Hello, America. We're Stone Cold Fox, and we want you to send us your suggestions for a live improv comedy sketch right now.
That's right. It's your move, America, so send us your wildest suggestions via Twitter, Facebook, or...
And think about this. Late Night with Jimmy Fallon doesn't start until 12:35.
Right.
We have... Was it a minute?
Yeah, it's a minute, but... Of improv, it was only like 35, 40 seconds because there was kind of like an intro of like John Murray saying what was happening.
And then the scene itself had to start outside the car. This is in the dark with floodlights. So it looks terrible.
Right, right.
It's the least flattering circumstance. It's just like giant floodlights.
Yeah, it looks like we're under lights at a Walmart, like a Walmart parking lot.
And the scene has to start outside of the car, but then end with us all inside the car.
Because essentially we would have to like improvise and write the sketch after the call to action and then the next commercial break. We couldn't be in a position where it was going to be brutally unfunny or it fail for whatever reason. And then also that none of us were going to feel like we were going to curse or something like that. So like we needed to kind of like get some version out of it amongst ourselves.
The Lexus executives and the various people who were calling the shots for the commercial were all inside a big trailer. There was a huge screen where they were monitoring the various suggestions coming in, vetoing the ones they didn't like, and approving those we could potentially use to inspire our scene.
We were like kind of running through scenarios of like reading the different suggestions and seeing which are the ones that we can do that would be the easiest to play in the short amount of time.
The first one was like... A gangster is going to go to the dentist or something.
Yeah, it's like gangsters going to the dentist.
Bobby, that job we talked about, did you do it?
Yeah, boss, I put the fluoride in the toothpaste and everything. All fresh.
Joey, you're awful quiet.
I didn't think it was very good.
You know what, though? I think, though, like, I was pleasantly surprised when I watched him again recently. And I think considering the circumstances, I was like, this could be way worse.
We were kind of having to, I remember being very stressed during the 15 or 20 minutes we had to sort of work out what we were going to do.
Yeah.
And then we did it live. And then we had to wait 3 hours to do the West Coast version.
Right.
and the same thing repeated, only now we're exhausted because we've been up all night.
According to my call sheet, we went live for the West Coast at 4:18 a.m., and at 4:19, we were wrapped. It was still a few hours before sunrise, but there was definitely that feeling that we had begun to transition from night into very early morning. It was surreal. We had just been live on national network television twice. It was kind of hard to process that it had actually happened.
I think I remember saying to everybody, I am confident that we did not sell a single Lexus.
Yeah. That's what's funny about that stuff. It's like, however these ideas are like generated, really ultimately what they only care about is not even how much is being sold, but it's like, hey, did we remember to talk about the product and did we remember to put the product in the thing?
It's weird. They want people who are cool and funny and can do lots of things. But I feel like you're never asked to do anything cool or funny in a commercial.
It's almost like knowing that, like, there's no reason why anybody should have a street legal Ferrari. Because you can't use it to its full potential in any way. Like, you know, you're not going to be going 200 miles an hour ever. But then it's also that thing of just like, you just like knowing that it's around. Like, you like knowing that power can be coiled and it's like existing somewhere.
When we return, the weirdest promotional gig I ever booked, where my wife and I allowed journalists to come into our house to tell them about our home audio system. Dead Eyes will be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
In the summer of 2014, my wife Anne and I hosted an all-day interactive promotional event for the Sonos wireless home sound system. This is an audio setup where you can connect all your devices and customize what you're listening to from one room to the next. I could go into more detail, but we just did the ad break and Sonos did not give us any money, so if you want to know more, you can go look it up, okay? All you need to know for the purposes of this is that they hired us to do basically a 15-minute tour of our home to show off how we use their product in our daily lives. And we would do this with a series of individual journalists, one after another, four times an hour, all day from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with an hour off for lunch. I recently tried looking to see if I could find any mention of this press event anywhere, ever. I could not find one.
I hate to think that we spent the whole day talking to journalists and it's impossible to find a single article. We let them into our lives.
We let them into our home.
We let them spend time with our son. We brought them into our baby daughter, who now is six, 7 years old.
I think so. I talked about my love of soccer and other various sports. And you cooked for them.
I played Tom Petty's American Girl while I finished up some of the... I don't even remember what I was cooking. Was it shrimp?
I don't know, because we have an endless flow of money that just comes to us. And we don't work. We travel from room to room listening to different music. And we just enjoy being together in our house of sound.
And how did 36 journalists speak to us and I can't find one article... that was written.
You know, I have a theory that they were just so comfortable in our home that they just forgot to write about this experience.
And I have a theory.
Yeah.
I think the reason that none of the 36 journalists who spent time with us wrote an article about it is that they realized that we were paid actors.
Oh.
Pretending to be part of a family.
Ooh.
And that none of it was real. And I think that they knew it. And I don't think we fooled any of them.
You don't?
I don't.
I'm very upset to hear that this is not real. Because I really want that brownstone for my own. Oof. Damn it.
All right, so to be clear, Anne is not my wife. We have never been married or romantically involved in any way. We were paid by Sonos to pretend to be husband and wife. Another actor played our son, and there was a pretend baby in the nursery that no one ever saw because they didn't exist.
Hey, Manny.
Oh, hey, Warren. What's up?
If I make noise in here, is that going to be a problem?
No, I don't think so. Can he do dishes?
That's Anne's actual husband. Not a paid actor, the real thing, walking in during our conversation. And their interaction was instantly more convincing than anything Anne and I did while pretending to be a couple in front of the journalists.
Don't do the dishes. But thank you for offering to do the dishes. Should be very grateful.
That's like the kind of thing that my dad, I've seen him do that kind of thing a lot, where he'll see an opportunity where he'll be like, oh, I was going to do this. And then he'll be like, oh, I can't? Okay, well, I offered. This is a real smart strategy.
Anne Carr is her full name. She was a UCB performer like me. We've acted together in a few things over the years, but I think the Sonos event was easily the most time we have ever spent around one another. And if I recall correctly, I don't think we had ever met prior to rehearsing for this gig the day before.
This is the long email from the Sonos event. We're getting everything together for this week's Sonos event in the West Village. Then they gave us the 7 W's. The who is Sonos. And the where will be in Chelsea in a 3-story brownstone. When, we had a dress rehearsal on Wednesday afternoon at 3. We walk through the script. We test the equipment, get familiar with our scripts. The what, you'll be walking the visitors through the house as if you were a family. The key we need is for everyone to just be relaxed and have fun interacting with one another. They want you to feel like a family, and they want the visitors to feel like they're visiting old friends. And then they have all these music cues that when they came in, we would be listening to Fly Me to the Moon by Sinatra in the entrance parlor.
Oh my God, now it's coming back, but I washed it from my memory.
There's our son's room, which is homework music, and they're playing Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. The baby's room, we had a baby, has a Pandora station for lullabies.
Oh, God.
So there's no baby, right? There's no baby. You just say the baby's asleep.
Oh, God. Just the ludicrousness of this is just really coming back to me. I cannot even. Yeah, I remember going in, and I think I remember saying something like, oh, shh, the baby's asleep. Why would you even go in there if there was a chance your child was sleeping? You wouldn't even try to go in because they might wake up.
And then we're back to we're still in the 7 W's. The why? Oh, they're getting cute in this email now. It says why? Why not? That's exhausting. I find that joke in the email just exhausting. After each 15-minute engagement, the journalist will be led to a holding area either behind the house or in a larger room where they will meet the clients and discuss the products.
I mean, did they really think this was our home? I didn't think so.
That was, I think, what was so exhausting to me, was immediately realizing that these journalists were, I mean, by nature, skeptical. I remember thinking, oh, this isn't going to work, and we have to do this 4 times an hour.
I remember that too.
Every time we refreshed, it felt worse because it wasn't like we were doing comedy for them. So we were just annoying these journalists.
At the beginning of each loop, we were able to keep it pretty natural for a minute or so, just making small talk. But as soon as we had to pivot to the first beat of the interactive tour, which was when our son comes downstairs and asks us for help with his school project, It was pretty obvious to us that most of the journalists immediately figured out that it was fake. But we couldn't break character, so we had to just keep going. A few of the journalists seemed pretty annoyed, especially by the end of it when we would celebrate our son finishing his schoolwork by playing Alice Cooper's School's Out while we broke into an impromptu dance party. Others seemed kind of bored or bemused. I remember one person, and I don't recall which outlet they worked for, who seemed genuinely delighted by it, but I'm not sure if that means he was fooled. I think for that guy, it may have been more like suspending his disbelief to enjoy a theme park ride or a Renaissance fair.
I don't think we ever got like punchy or incoherent, but like the Groundhog Day effect of it all became very pronounced in the second half of the day. You hear about The Shining with Stanley Kubrick, how the takes you see in the movie of Jack Nicholson or Shelley Duvall that are so intense and they're going crazy. And it's because they've done the same scene dozens of times. You know, that is how it felt.
Oh, like you're literally going insane.
Do you remember how much we got paid for that full day?
I was trying to think of that. I can't remember. I don't think it was worth it, though.
We did it for $350.
Oh, my God. Why?
Which?
Oh, and also, weren't we supposed to get a... Somebody was like, we were supposed to get a speaker or something.
Yeah. At the end of the day, the Sonos people said they were really happy with us. And they were going to be sending us all Sonos systems for our homes to use. And as far as I know, because the gig was booked through UCB, and they sent one to UCB's office, and they didn't send any for us. So
I think they were talking about the royal you.
Oh, right? They were like, send
oh,
one
you
to, like,
as a UCB person, we're going to send this. No, I think they were full of it, but.
They owe us a Sonos.
They owe us a Sonos.
They owe us a Sonos. And
well, and it's not going to be a 2014 Sonos. It's got to be a 2021 Sonos.
Absolutely not. A 2014 Sonos system would be not only unacceptable, it would be a calculated insult at this point.
If anyone at Sonos is listening and wants to make this right, my DMs are open. But I'm not sure that even getting the free sound systems we were promised would make us feel any better about the strange and exhausting experience we went through that day.
Well, I remember just looking, being in awe of the house and thinking, I will never have anything this nice in my life. But I have to remember that I have to pretend to be this person, and I felt like a liar. You know, I mean, basically what we do lie for a living.
Yeah, well, because... You know, there is that thing about, like, acting being lying, but not really, because you're up front. You go to a play, you go to a movie. You're not tricking anybody, you know? Like,
exactly.
Everyone's in on it, so it's not really a lie. It's pretending. But we were supposed to be tricking these journalists.
I don't know. I felt like a con artist. I felt very not comfortable. Not comfortable.
The Sonos gig was still more money in a single day than I would have made in an entire week at my bookstore job. So in that sense, I don't fully regret it. But I do sort of look back at the whole experience and think, I wish I could have said no to that.
Do you have that attitude in life about other things, or is it strictly commercials?
This is Molly Lloyd again.
It's only in hindsight, as I've been reflecting on it, that I've kind of been like, no, I didn't like that one. No, my feet hurt all day when I did that one. No, you know, there's things where I'll look back and be like, that wasn't what I really wanted to be doing, or, you know.
Is it like your experience on the set itself gives you bad memories, or just the sort of like the umbrella of like, I have to shoot a commercial. It's 30 seconds. Nobody watches commercials anyway. Like, is it that kind of thing? Like, you get yourself into a headspace where you're like, this is all bullshit?
I just tend to have kind of a slightly sour outlook when I look back. And I don't think that that is useful or helpful to me overall. I don't think it's like, I think it would be a lot better if I had a little bit more of the outlook of like, hey, you're working.
Yes, I think so. I'm also not wearing rose-colored glasses. Like, I know that the advertising world has a lot of dark sides. It's it's pushing toys on our children. It's pushing alcohol on our teenagers. It's, you know what I mean? Like, I think that I would never say, this is great. I feel completely fulfilled. Every bone in my body says yes to advertising. Like I would never say that, because I also see that, like, we're doing commercials because it's an awesome way to pay the bills. You get to work with great people. I've worked with, like, Oscar-winning filmmakers and stuff. Like, it's how everybody pays the bills.
I did these commercials when I was a little kid.
I remember that, yes.
And they were a real fun couple of days. And I remember I was like, hey, I got a little money. And I don't remember what I spent it on. I probably spent it on books or toys or something. But it was 100% positive experience.
Right.
And I don't know when I lost that. Like, why I can't just be like, hey, this is kind of neat. You know, like.
Also, when you're a kid, the commercial set and the commercial experience was not a novel concept. It felt like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be on TV. And maybe at this point, this is just me spitballing here. But maybe at this point, you're sort of like, but that's not what I want to be doing. When you're a kid, you're like, I want to be doing anything but go to school. And maybe now you're like, I'd rather go to school than shoot this commercial. Like, dear God in heaven.
Oh, no, I don't want to go to school. I just sound like a complainer now because I don't want that either.
Commercials to me don't feel like the opposite experience of doing film and television. They feel like they're all part of the package. Like, we do commercials to be able to work with new and funny people and talented people and to support us while we audition. And it's all part of it. It's all part of keeping this business called show in our life. And the other part of me is like, life is too short to do shit that makes you that unhappy or unfulfilled or it's not for you. But otherwise, I think that there are a ton of benefits for doing commercials. Obviously, it's very nice to pay your mortgage and send your kid to school. But if it feels like shit to you, don't do it. Don't do it. Trust your gut.
Yeah, I need to do it, though. I got to do it.
You got to do it. What, Connor, why do you feel like you have to do it?
Back in the year 2000, when I was cast in the role of Private Zelinsky in Band of Brothers, I thought that was the thing that was going to set me on the path to joining the Screen Actors Guild. But it wasn't. It was commercials, 13 years later, that finally qualified me to join the union. And most years, it has been commercials that kept me from losing my SAG health insurance. It's not the work I'm proudest of. It's not the work that I think back fondly on years later. But it's where I started. And it's the work that has allowed me to keep acting for a living. It has sustained me at times when nothing else was happening for me professionally. And despite all my whining and complaining, deep down, I am grateful for it, even though I hate it.
If you had two jobs that were sort of like, you got the same amount of money and one of them was a commercial and one of them was like a film or a TV show, which way would you go?
I don't know why I hesitated. I would do film or television.
All right.
There's no question. The commercial story is 30 seconds long, right? Whereas film and television, you get to be a part of telling a much longer story, and that is incredibly gratifying.
Now, what if you thought there was a reasonable chance that it was the beginning of like a years-long iconic campaign? Would that change things at all?
Yeah, I'd have to look at everything and really weigh it. Yeah, if I got offered a campaign that could pay for my kids' first 2 years in college...
Have there been big campaigns that have slipped out of your fingers? Like, have you ever auditioned for any iconic characters, like Wendy? You ever auditioned for actual Wendy?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I didn't book it, obviously. Yes, I went in for Wendy. I didn't go in for Flo, mm-hmm. Although that would be a great gig.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yes,
I remember. KFC, right?
Yeah, almost.
That was close.
In our next episode, the story of how I came this close to becoming Colonel Sanders, the spokes character for Kentucky Fried Chicken, and was rejected twice. a deep dive into a saga which features many actors getting their hopes up, only to be dashed on a wave of secret herbs and spices. Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite, with production assistance from Jordan Allen and Megan Sarnacki. Special thanks to my guests Molly Lloyd, Nicole Byer, Jonathan Fernandez, Ann Carr, and also Ann Carr's actual husband, who is not me. Also thanks to Amy Mann for letting us use this song that's playing in the background. Called Freeway, and it can be found on her 2008 album, Fucking Smilers. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter, at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about this show. Especially if you are friends with Tom Hanks, who plays an ambitious advertising executive in the 1986 movie Nothing in Common, in which he co-stars with Jackie Gleason. It's most commonly described as being about a father and son coming to terms with each other in adulthood, and it definitely is that. But a lot of this film is about working at an ad agency. We see pitch meetings, brainstorming sessions, filming on a soundstage, dealing with actors on set. The whole process. In the end, Tom Hanks's character decides that there are more important things in life than making commercials. Sorry to spoil the movie, but it came out 35 years ago. You have plenty of time. Thanks for listening. Be smart. Stay safe.
Was a HeadGum original.